Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you want? Beak or jaws? Feathers or fur? Sharp teeth or feet with claws? Whatever's preferred. They'll grant you all last requests to steady your nerves. Then podcast the body parts get severed and served. Bring your weak shit where the wolf and owl are. That ain't just a mistake, that's an awful howler. Both of them are known to pull up at your shows. Have the crowd witnessing a murder like they rolled in with a gang of crows. Fuck the censorship, let them see the whole thing. They stay dressed to kill, never sheep's clothing. Dark enough to turn the sun to the moon. You'll see nothing, all you hear's a huff a puff. Expect killings, red spilling and flesh ripping. Impressive in it, the death bringing his head spinning. Just kidding, every word in his song's about two grown men dressed up as a bird and a dog.
Yo, hey baby, what you listening to? What's going through your ear holes?
Yes, oh my gosh, can you believe it? Can you believe it? We're back.
Mate, look at you. It's the summertime, so I need to be honest from the outset and say, during the month of August, we will be going down to one episode a week, right?
Yeah, summer break, summer vacation. And some people would go, do you know what? Let's rest the podcast. All we're resting is the bonus episodes. Let's be honest.
It's hard for me to get past the fact you look so fucking drippy this morning, my G. You look lit. You genuinely look right. This is how you look. This is, I say this with as much earnesty as I have in my soul and in my peak, right?
Yeah.
You look like you've just fucking spent the whole night laying down an album that is going to change a genre.
Listen,
of music.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. About 4 a.m., we put down... I thought we're done with the session, right? I thought we were done with the session. We put down a track, right? I know people say Game Changer. Let me lay this on you. Game Smasher. As in...
Wow.
Yeah. As in, they're going to have to pick up pieces of the game and put the game back together like a jigsaw puzzle after the track that we just put down. It's a bit house. It's a bit drum and bass. It's a bit early dubstep, but with a wicked vocal over the top of it. I think you're going to love it.
There's a little old man with a broom who's just walked into the studio and gone, oh my God, they've smashed the game. The game is smashed. This is going to take me hours to clean up. Just you, Nelly and James Arthur were just sitting there with big cigars, stuffing back on Hennessy.
I wrote a lyric last night, and honestly, I said to the guys, I need to take the rest of the week off, man. Do you know what I mean? Because it was on that level. It was on that level, though. Yeah.
Have you ever written lyrics down?
You know, like I used to write. I used to write a lot of raps, a lot of raps. Like, I used to carry a notebook. Like, I make notes all the time for stand-up now. Look at me pretending like I've got a discipline all the time. Occasionally when I remember, I write notes for stand-up. And I'd put them on my phone now. This is fucking, like, I put notes on my phone for stand-up. And I've got no idea what the fuck they mean. Like, let me have a look.
Oh, man, I've got loads of those. Like, you know, back in the 90s, man, you know when Britpop was big?
Yeah.
Me and my friend Rob Johnson, right? We basically, neither of us could play any instruments, but we were obsessed with, like, Blur, Oasis, Reef, all those vibes, yeah?
Yeah.
Castaway and all that sort of cast, sorry. And all that. So we basically started trying to write sort of songs. And my dad was clearing out a loft not so long ago and found the book of songs. And I've never felt embarrassment like scrolling through these these songs. At the time, I thought I'd write an Imagine by John Lennon. And now they read like S Club 7 vibes. They're so fucking... really bad, really, like, you know, you read them and a little bit of you goes, oh, that's why no one was interested in me. Like,
I wrote a song when I was a teenager, and like, you know, I think I'd read something about writing what you know. Yeah. And I didn't even know this because I didn't have a driving license. I wrote a song called Drive, right? And it was right. And it was like, so it was like a bit like, you know, Summertime, that Will Smith song where he's like talking about cruising.
It's about
a bit like that. Do you know what I mean? But and then the chorus goes, I can remember the chorus. The chorus goes, drive, 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 drive. So quite simplistic. And then it goes, nothing better to keep you alive, ignoring the fact that the roads are probably the biggest killer statistically.
Mate. More killer, the biggest killer in the country, in the world, the roads. Yeah.
Listen, I've got something insane to tell you now. Absolutely insane. Do you remember we were talking about Mickey Drips last episode?
Yeah.
So we've had a load of emails in about how to stop Mickey Drips, right?
Oh man, because of King Gary coming out, a lot of people have binged up to episode 5. Yeah. And
by the way, before we get into Mickey Drips, sorry, this is so fucking rude of me. Congratulations on King Gary, bro. I've been getting loads of messages about... Well, I'll be honest with you. I've been getting tagged in loads of messages complimenting you on King Gary. But it has been absolutely amazing, man. We were talking about this on the night that it went out. How much were you... Because you were on holiday, weren't you, the night it went out?
Yeah.
How much were you shitting yourself that night?
Anxiety. You know what? I tried to keep a lid on it. I did, like, through the whole week, I did quite a lot of meditation. And try to really chill and just not think about work or anything. And then Friday came round and that all just went to pot. And also because it's a 2-hour time difference in Crete.
Right.
So you're basically sitting there at like, what is it, like 11:30 at night. And we've been to a Greek night that night, which was incredible. Mm. It's such a weird thing, isn't it? Because I think in what we do for a living and what we do with this and everything, you just, I think, it's a real leveler, and like I was talking to my wife about this, about criticism and how I know that everyone says, oh, constructive criticism, blah, 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 and all that. But criticism is such a fucking needless thing. Or any kind of, like, you know, like when I was out in Crete, if I had a bad meal, I didn't criticize it or fucking have a go at the waiter or anything.
You throw it over the wall or something, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But I wouldn't say it to someone's face. I wouldn't want to hurt someone's feelings. Sure. What you realise is that there's a, and you know, from the stuff I've read, I don't get too involved in social media. If something is at me, I'll read it. But so I think critics, it's just in general, is such a. I think if you're going to spread something, spread positivity. Do you know what I mean? That's what I try and do in my life. Sometimes, you know, obviously, not anyone. I'm not a monk. Sometimes things fucking trip me up, and I get have a little bit of a dig.
Monks don't really spread. I mean, they're very quiet, aren't they, by nature?
No, I'm very positive, though. Mm. Silence is almost the most positive thing of all, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you think monks speak in brains?
Sorry? Like, do you think monks speak in brains? The way you said that that there's a language called brains.
No, but like from brain to brain.
Telepathically?
Like, yeah.
Right.
Do you think that's how they communicate?
No, I don't.
I like the thought, right, that they're all sitting there and they've got to such a high place with their minds, right, that they can telepathically, they'll be sitting there and they'll be like, I don't know, because they don't have TVs and stuff. I don't even know if they have books, but they'll just be sitting there in the silence. And then they're like, oh, what, you know, hey, you know, telepathically, John, what's for lunch? Mm. And it's like, oh, Mick, I think it's actually, you know, like boiled rice and cabbage night or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, what I'm getting from that is they eat some real shit.
Yeah. And then David comes walking in the room and that telepathically, that, oh no, it's David. Oh, fuck, he does my head in. And David comes in, because you can't give anyone a silent treatment in silence. And then David comes in and goes, boiled cabbage and rice night tonight, eh? And they're like, there's nothing telepathically coming back to David. And then is David thinking, are they ignoring me? Or is he thinking they're working on a different frequency?
Mm. You, somebody's pitched... have you pitched this as a sitcom?
I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, it is interesting. I don't think... Listen, my suspicion is... But you might be right, Tom, as you frequently are on these things. When I believe you to be at your batshittest, we get an email saying that actually there's some fact to what you're speculating on. I would sort of think that they... They get to a point where there's like little visual cues. Do you know what I mean? Where they're so attuned to each other in silence. Do you know what I mean? That they can sort of, you know, even the raise of an eyebrow, he knows that means. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like chicken. Well, I feel like chicken
like
tonight.
The tiniest. Yeah, but then imagine misreading the situation.
Sure.
Like just by it, and it's just, oh, no, it's just a twitch that I've had. Like, I sometimes think about monks. Like, do they just go into a room on their own and just go, oh, fucking hell. This is so hard work. Why did I sign up for this?
It does feel like hard work. Do you ever watch that episode of Partridge where he went to stay with him? Oh, it was funny, man. It's funny. I respect. Well, we talked about this before, but I really I like faith as a thing. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
Do you reckon we could be monks? What do you think would hold us back from being monks?
I think if I was going to be a monk with anyone, I could be a monk with you. Because I think we are now on a level where we could probably communicate.
Just me silently gesturing to you. You had to go and fucking bring it up. Put the idea in my head at Wolf and Owl, didn't you? And now we've done it. And look at us. We're stuck in a monastery. I'd do all that with my eyebrows.
You're very, very like readable eyebrows. I try and communicate solely with my nose.
Like a little monkey cat. Or catty monk. I can't figure out which one.
If we could have any guest on this show, you know what I'd have?
What?
An ex-monk. An ex-monk.
Tom, sometimes, if I'd have asked you this last week, you wouldn't have said that. So let me just explain to you what you need to say. What you need to say is, at the moment, I feel like we should have an ex-monk on the podcast. But you've said it like... I don't know why you have to fucking preface it by going, if we could have any guest in the world, do you know what I'd have? Is an ex-monk. No, that's literally something that's popped into your head in the last 40 seconds.
I would love one, though. It would be an amazing thing, wouldn't it? Just to,
what would you... Like, okay, let's workshop this. What questions would you ask?
Firstly, I'd say, what made you think about becoming a monk?
Good. It's a good opener.
Secondly, I would be like, how are your brethren? Are you still in contact with them? Or your flock?
Would you do the thing where you ask a question and then start looking at your phone immediately as the monk's talking?
No. Oh, no, I'd be like genuinely enthralled about it. Like, do you miss the monk habit that you used to... What's it called? The thing that they wear, monk's habit, isn't it?
No, that's a nun's thing, isn't it? Isn't it cassock?
Oh, yeah. Do you miss your cassock? Do you still have your sandals? What's the three best things about being a monk and the three worst things about being a monk?
Okay. And then...
Do you actually drink mead?
I think your final question, are there any stereotypes that I've missed?
Do you prefer it now you can grow your hair?
I bet, but after you've been if you've left the monkery...
Is that what it's called, a monkery?
It's not.
But you know what? It's taking you like 50 episodes to get a word wrong. But fuck me, you did it in class. Monkery! Just going to see the chief monk and going, you all right, yeah. Keith? Yeah. Look, if I'm going to be honest with you, I'm done with the monkery.
You want to leave? Sorry. You saying you want to leave the monkery?
I've had it up to here with the monkery. It's all the monkey business, if I'm honest with you. monkeying around isn't really doing it for me. Monkeying around. Oh, all right, Keith. Yeah, no, I get it. Well, thanks, Sean. Well, hopefully I'll see you around or something. We'll just leave your sandals and your cassock. Yep.
Is it all right if I get a change of clothes first? Anyway, that's great, all that monk stuff. But the reason we started on this little conversational thing, Mickey Drip.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I got an email, we got more than one email. I say look at me, fucking mask has slipped, isn't it? We got an email. A number of emails telling us how to stop Mickey drips. And
yeah,
have you been? I see. Have you received this message as well?
I've had a couple. I've had like some. Yeah, the one that I was like, oh my god, that's a fucking mad thing.
What?
Which is that? Have you had the squeeze in your perineum?
Yes, that's what I'm about to tell you. Right. So
is that
you take your finger. Okay, we'll talk about this, but you take your finger and you sort of push upwards and forwards against the back of your ball bag, right? And apparently there's some little kind of little
like a button.
There's a like a Yeah, and basically you press that, and then after you jizz, you'll find that no, it's like a little bit of piss, and that's the bit that's coming out afterwards. So look, I'm going to tell you now, I've tried it.
Have you? Yeah. Did it work?
100%.
It worked.
100% effectiveness rate. That's the plus. That's the positive of this story. The negative of this story is I don't know how you do that at a urinal.
Yeah, yeah. No, you've got to become a cubicle guy.
You have to. You have to because... No, but you're dragging your finger up the underside of your fucking gooch.
So and a little. Oh.
Yeah. That's got it. No, just getting rid of the little piss reservoir behind my ball bag.
Isn't it funny? Like, whoever created, like, man or humans, is that someone basically put a little button or a lever behind your ball bag to do that thing. But it's like, you know, like when you've got a key on your laptop or like something on your phone.
Yeah.
It's like Steve Jobs invented something on your phone and you go, oh shit, oh, that makes it a lot easier to use. That's what a pyramid.
Yeah. It's like a little DVD Easter egg. You know, you have to look for it. But when you find it, for the real fans of the human body, it's a real treat.
Who found that as well?
I know. Well, there must be, I imagine it's a guy like, I mean, listen, we're a human race that discovered that cow's milk is a thing. Do you know what I mean? That you want to drink. But like, I think, you know, somebody was sat there or stood after a piss and just thinking, like, well, how do I stop these dribbles? And just messing around. I don't know how you isolate it to that one thing. Because I've done the thing where I've shaken and shaken and shaken to the point where...
I've squeezed and shaken.
Yeah, I've done a lot of that. Just like absolutely punishing the helmet to try and like, squeeze every last bit in a vain hope.
Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
No matter what you're looking for in a non-alcoholic beer, there's only one name that has it all. Athletic Brewing Co. Full flavor? It's athletic. Huge variety? It's athletic. Award-winning styles you can get online, at the bar, or the grocery store? It's athletic. In fact, when it comes to amazing non-alcoholic beer, there's no question. It's athletic. Ask for it and find out. Go to askforathletic.com to find your closest retailer today. Near beer.
That I'm not going to ruin my shorts on holiday.
What I like is that's just a really, like, either a very desperate or very intelligent man who's just gone, you know what, if I just mess around, it's not mess around on the road of a car to see what's wrong with it.
And I'd like to think this guy's sort of made that his goal. You know how you're supposed to give yourself an objective and you try and solve it? Every day he just sort of said to his other half, I'm just off to the toilet again. I'll be about 45 minutes to an hour. I need to figure this out.
I keep featuring Doc Brown from Back to the
Future. He does it every time he goes to a restaurant. His wife just explaining to the other couple they've gone with, no, sorry, it's just, it's a thing. Once he's cracked this, he says he can really help people
really
out.
Really working on a cure for Mickey Drips.
Yeah. What he's going to do is he's going to find a cure for Mickey Drips. And then what he's going to do after that is distribute the information really poorly. so that so that not everyone will know. Still, even after he's found this,
it'd be great if you could, if you could name it after it, call it like the Duncan button or something.
Yeah, he names it after his wife for all the struggle she's gone through. Yeah, this is the... What you have to do is you have to push on the Matilda. honestly, you don't have to do this stuff. Honestly, you don't... No, honestly, my love, I want to do this. It's a dedication to you. And so that little bit in the perineum that releases the last bit of piss after you think you've finished is going to be called the Matilda. Happy anniversary.
I've named my last work after you.
Anyway, how was your holiday? Was it good?
Well, it was amazing. It was lovely to get you. I'm going to talk about a couple of little faux pas I made. In my first thing I did that was wrong is I went away and I thought, I want to look like pool and beach ready. I want to be like fucking, I want to be gone. I want to feel good about myself. So I had a little shave of the old back. And then I decided to shave my ass, right?
Right. What was the thinking behind that?
I just thought, you know what, it was one of those things. You know, like it's that famous thing when you start shaving, you sort of become addictive to just getting rid of hair.
Sure.
Right? Have you ever done that? Have you ever shaved your ass?
I shaved my ass.
Yeah.
No, I've shaved my balls. I never shaved my ass.
Right. So don't. It's right. I shaved my ass before we go away. Right.
Okay. Please talk me through. I'd like to know as much detail as possible about the actual. When this happened and how much of it...
This is before we went. Okay. I'm like, I want to basically be in... If there comes a time where I want to leap into the sea naked, I want to know that my ass isn't fucking hairy. And look, I look like a man who's got a hairy ass. But I sort of thought, I just want to sort of feel nice about myself. So I fucking shave it. And the worst thing of doing, right, is I don't have hair, right? So I'm not accustomed to sort of fades or whatever. Trying to fade your fucking, the fact you've shaved your ass in and then trying to fade in the fact you've got really hairy legs is an absolute clusterfuck. Because what it does is it makes it look right, like you're wearing a fake pair of, like a bum-coloured pair of pants. Right? So you try and fade it in. Like with a gradual fade, going through the different lengths of razor.
You're trying to do a skin fade below your ass cheek. It's incredible.
Yeah, like literally have your ass cheek and then you've got like a fucking 0.5, 0.1, 0.2, and then you're just full hair, right? So I start doing it anyway. I get it looking okay. I think this is passable.
Yeah.
What I don't fucking consider wrong is... The pool that we had in our hotel was a saltwater pool, right? You know, like the little bits that you get inside the swimming trunks, those little netting bits.
Yeah.
When saltwater gets in there, even if you have a shower and you wash after, it can become quite itchy at the best of times. I spent the first 3 days of my fucking holiday with my wife, who I tried to sort of like feel like really attractive, like thinking, yeah, I'll shave up and I'll fucking look good. I spent the first 3 days as a 42-year-old man with nappy rash. Like I was in such like fucking like mad agony. Like in the end, I was fucking, we had a pool in our villa we're in. I ended up having to sort of like try and fucking get some sun to my bum to get like dry it out. No, it was so
like a
fucking
old
sore.
Fish you've caught.
I'm going to go to a chemist and ask for fucking nappy cream, right?
What, did you tell Catherine you were going to shave your ass, first of all?
Yeah.
And what did she? What was her response to that?
I mean, she like it is with most of the things. It's like, oh, right, okay, right, all right. I don't know why you're doing this.
Maybe
instead of shaving your ass. Maybe you shaving your ass, you shouldn't have had that fourth eclair that you had last night.
That's what Lisa's like too. I'm thinking about doing this to look better. Why don't you just eat and exercise like a normal human? If you're worried about body image and you want to do something, just stop eating. All right?
You just step on a fucking treadmill. Fucking losing a fucking whatever it is, just for a fucking hair on my hair mass of
my
body.
Did you go right into the crack?
No, mate, I don't delve around down there. I have done that once.
No, I was going to say, because I've heard that that's a real problem.
Yeah.
If you start shaving in and around the anus.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to be really careful, because actually those hairs actually have quite an important job of self-cleaning your thumb at times.
No, I don't want to. But
they have clegg nuts and all that sort of stuff. And if they're not to catch them, your skid marks become, that's why people have really, really bad skid marks. If you want to find someone who shaved their up like their between their bum cheeks, like look,
I think this might be speculation.
No, look in the back of their pants.
That's the best way. Yeah, don't ask them. By the way, just go straight in. You had a good time.
It was nice. Yeah.
What was the other thing? What was the other thing?
I got badly burnt as well. Really badly, stupidly. I catch the sun nice, I catch it nice, baby. But we went on a boat trip, I was swimming in the sea after my bum had cleared up, and I stupidly didn't put enough on, and then I was sitting like that trying to be cool in the back of the boat, and burnt under my armpits, which is the worst.
Under your armpits?
Yeah.
Was that reflecting off a surface underneath?
Yeah, it must have been the white of the boat. But yeah. Oh man. Shout out to, I don't doubt he listens to this podcast because he doesn't speak much English and he's from Crete. But shout out to Costas, the boatman. He was amazing. He was just an incredible guy. He brought
You're such a fucking textbook holiday maker, which is where I'm sure Costas is a real nice guy. You're one of thousands of people he sees every summer. And for some reason, you've come back thinking you made a real fucking connection with
him. Right, I feel like that with
him. You had a bit of a chat. And you walked away and he said to Kat, I bet you're the first person to actually sort of refer to him by his name. I just think you need to treat these people like humans, you know? Like a guy that thinks that he's fallen in love with a stripper after a stag do.
That happened to my friend. We all went out to Riga and he fell in love with a stripper and actually he was single at the time and he was having a bit of a, I won't name this guy, having a bit of a tough time and stuff. And
Well done for the restraint you've just shown.
Yeah, I was just literally...
I'm actually impressed.
His name was on the tip of my tongue. I've not done it. we went to Riga for a mate stag do, and he was like, oh, man, this girl is amazing, da-da-da. And then at the wedding, he turned up with the said stripper. And,
God.
Yeah, paid for her to come and live with him. And, it didn't last for long.
Fuck off.
Yeah, it didn't last for... because sort of, yeah. She realised what a loser he was and moved up into London.
God.
Have you ever been to Latvia, like Riga?
No.
So their gift of like what they give to you is they're obsessed with potatoes. Like when you're out in the street and stuff, like people just come over and will give you a potato and you give them a bit of money for it. But it's really like an amazing like thing.
What the fuck are you talking about?
They'll walk over to you and then like hold you a potato, sort of pass it to you, and then and then sort of like either take it as a gift or you can give them a little bit of money for it.
Well, and how frequently did that happen?
I probably had about 8-9 potatoes and I was there for 3 days.
As you come walking, hello, mate. We've hit the fucking jackpot. Get the sack.
I felt bad as well because it didn't take them home with me, but because you're not allowed to, are you?
No, you're not. Did you actually buy the potatoes? That's what I'm saying.
No.
You're the type of bloke that will just, at the kindness, do you know what? I don't even want a potato. I don't like a potato. I don't feel like a potato, but you're a sweet, sweet soul. And I just respect what you're doing.
Yeah,
keep
but
on
my,
the hustle.
My thing was, there's no way I could do anything with this potato. I can't eat it. Even an onion, you can eat like an apple. A potato you can't because it's poisonous, right?
I would fucking love it if somebody sold you an onion and just to show them how much you liked it, you just started eating it like a fucking apple in front of them.
I frequently, like when we're on holiday, if someone turns around and says this is our speciality dish, even if in my head I've had like all day what I want to eat, I'll end up going with the speciality dish. And Catherine's like, why didn't you just have this thing? The thing that you talk, say over all day I'm talking about, oh, I'm going to have like a lamb gyro. I'm going to have like a lamb kebab thing. That's all I'm obsessed with. And then I get there in the evening and someone goes, oh, we've got some monkfish. It's our speciality. I'll go, oh, I'll have that then. And then sit there eating it, looking at someone on another table with a lamb gyro, thinking, I should have fucking had that.
But do you know why that is? It's because you're a nice man.
Yeah.
It's because you've got a lovely heart and somebody offers you a speciality dish and you feel like they've put a bit of extra effort in, that's a speciality. I don't want the speciality to go to waste and you order it. It's like a lovely thing about
you. Yeah. And then I sit there eating it, disappointed, but feigning the fact I'm actually
fucking mug.
Enjoying every bite of it. What we need to do, and I'm sure you'll feel the same. Do you know the people, foreign waiters and waitresses? I need to give them a massive shout out, man. I watch these
every single one.
Mate, they're a credit to humanity. Because actually, you know what? They speak four or five different languages, right? Mm-hmm. Effortlessly. They can deal with all manner of different people. They can use every phone to take a picture with. Like, I sit and watch them and I think, fucking hell. You know, if everyone was like you guys, maybe the world would be a better place. And they tirelessly work. They can't do enough for you. Handshakes, they remember everyone's name. Mm.
A big shout out to the hardworking foreigners.
I'm saying the waiters and waitresses.
All right.
Have you been out since you've been in Portugal?
Yeah, we went out last night.
Because Portugal is like the place to be for this month, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. It's very much the place to be.
I want to know what bit it is you're doing. So we haven't even told people. I'm on holiday.
You're in Portugal. So Gomes is very good, actually. He's been very, very sweet. It's a fucking blessing to his character that he's on holiday and he's still recording this podcast. That's why we love Rob's shout out, the owl shout out of when he rides inside it. You see pictures of people out there. I think Amanda Holden's out there, Holly's out there, Holly Willoughby's out there. It's quite, at the deck. Quite a lot of footballers are out there. Oh, yeah, I saw the other day, you should try and find out where Carl Walker and everyone's staying because they've done, they've been doing like this kick-up challenge, like air tennis. Going to football tennis.
What do you think? What do you think I should be there to hand out drinks?
No, it'd be quite cool if you turned up and had a laugh with him. Like that could be quite a laugh, like a funny thing for a little story to tell.
Oh, that'd be a good thing for the old socials. Yeah, get that on the gram.
Turning up with your three boys and absolutely disappointing them. Go on, Dad. A game of a kick-up challenge.
Oh, God. Do you know what? Even saying that as a joke, I just sort of, the look on my boys' faces. I did a thing last night. We're at this restaurant and they had like this musical entertainment. They had a musician, like a singer. Fucking hell. I don't know why I'm talking like this today.
Was it Portuguese, authentic Portuguese, or was he like doing English?
No, they were doing like Frank Sinatra and Robbie Williams and stuff like that.
Yeah.
At one point they said, kids, you want to come down and dance? And it's very difficult when you've got boys at the ages that we've got, because something that they thought was cool to do 2 weeks ago, they now think is absolutely cringy and awful, right? So the last time we went to Portugal, which is obviously pre-COVID whenever, they would go down and dance, right? And then I said to them, do you want to go and dance? And honestly, mate, it was like it was the worst possible thing. It's like I'd said to them, do you fancy tongue-kissing mum after dinner?
That's fucking...
honestly, the way they looked at me, and then I sort of, like, doubled down on it. I went, go on, boys, smack it on the dance floor. And then Theo went to me, can you keep it down, please?
Oh, wow. Wowzers.
He was so embarrassed. It was so mad, man. Like, I can't explain it to you, man. The feeling of your children being embarrassed of you, it's so rank.
Do you know who I feel sorry for? I know, obviously, my heart goes out to you, Lisa, but it's probably little Alex. Because actually, he's probably thinking, actually, I would like to dance. Because he's, like, what, 2 years younger than Theo? Three?
Yeah.
So those 2 years apart, he's dancing for him, still cool, but he's trying to keep up with his brothers.
Do you know what? Fair play to him. He actually went out eventually. Him and Charlie did do a bit, actually.
Yeah.
I think it was like they were sort of following Theo's lead a bit. Do you know what I mean? Because Theo ain't having that now.
He's the boss, isn't he? Did they do the things? When I was away, I noticed a lot of kids and families just sitting on their phones.
No, we ban all that.
Oh, do you? Credit to you, man.
Yeah, like when we're travelling, they can be on screens, but like I just feel like, to be honest with you, if they got really aggy and it just felt like they were utterly bored, then we probably would let them. But I don't know. It's a difficult one, man. I don't judge anybody. If I see a family like and they're all their kids on their phones, you sort of think to yourself, you do find yourself thinking, I get it. Do you know what I mean? If that's what you need to do to have a quiet dinner, then I completely understand. Because they're not allowed on screens, our boys, during dinner.
Yeah.
And it's fucking hard to keep them engaged. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they're sitting with their parents. I understand why you get bored and irritated by that, sitting with your parents for a meal. But yeah, we don't let them. But it's hard. Sometimes it's hard.
What I noticed as well when I went away, and I like watching people, it's one of my favourite things, is you notice dads that are like sort of dads who are obviously work dads who are out all the time, and all of a sudden they're with their families for a week or two. And you can see, you know, in their breakfast, you hear the mum of the family just go, you know what, I'm fucking going to chill and I'm going to enjoy myself. Fair play. I'm going to, you know. There was one family that the mum looked like she was sort of, she'd basically just gone, you're going to look after these two. And I'm just going to fucking, this is about me now, right? And it's sort of that, the dads who are trying to sort of show a bit of power in front of their kids and also in front of their wives and lose that was like one of the most toe-cringingly bad. There was a dad there whose kids clearly had no respect for it. It was heartbreaking to watch. And he'd be like, come on, guys, come on, pull time's over, let's get your clothes on, or yeah, get your towels on, we're going to go up. And the mum would just be reading. And then he'd sort of like two or three times ask them, we'd go, we're still looking at our phones. We still need to get ready and go. Come on, guys. And then he did this weird shoulder rolling thing. Like, I don't know whether he was trying to be tough or what. And, you know, he, by the way, his kids, I don't know if he listens to his podcast, but, you know, I'll never see it. His kids were called Josie and Ian, which I thought were quite sort of traditional.
Ian?
Yeah. I thought it was quite... Me and Catherine found it.
I don't think I've seen a kid called Ian.
No, maybe it'll come. Maybe it's coming back. But he'd be like, "Come on, Josie, Ian, come on, let's not look at those. Let's start to get ready." And then he'd look towards the mum for help after about 15, 20 minutes, and she was just like, "No, I've left. I'm fucking. This is me. This is about me." Like reading a book, and he looked like a whimpering, like, you know, like when you sort of see, like someone in an action film and they haven't got the metal to take on the bad guys and they're looking for The Rock or they're looking for fucking Mark Wahlberg to come and save them. That's what he was like. And in the end, she just goes, Josie, yeah, put your clothes on. And then they just put down their phones, start putting their clothes on. It was so sad to watch.
Well, do you know what? You do remind me of something I did yesterday, which was arguably more pathetic than that, which was we were sat on the sunbeds by the pool yesterday. And one of the kids was just sat out in the sun, like properly out in the sun. And I could tell that we were going to have a nightmare with him that evening because he's going to be all exhausted and like overheated or whatever. So I said to him, mate, move over. Like I said, I put a sunbed over here in the shade. Go and sit over there. And he goes, I don't want to. I'm all right here, Dad. And he wasn't all right there. He was too hot, but he just didn't. He couldn't be asked to move. I get that, right? But I said to him, look, mate, just move over there. You'll feel better for it. He's like, no. Do you know what I ended up doing?
What?
I ended up basically grassing him up to Lisa. It's so tragic.
God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Honestly, I said the words, Lisa, I'm telling him to move over to that.
Oh my life. You're like the prison rat now in that villa.
No, yeah, honestly, the rest of last night and this morning, he's been walking past me going, little snitch.
Yeah. There'll be razor blades in your cornflakes.
Oh, it's so bad.
Man. He's
so
like literally telling the other two. It's like, yeah. You know, Dad's a rat. That's what a dancing thing. He probably wanted to dance.
Just
that's bad of me. So I'm just picturing it's Theo, but it could have been the other two.
Walking into the kitchen and seeing him fucking melting some sugar into the kettle.
Where's my toothbrush? Prison shank.
Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home. Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch. The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed. And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents. Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Okay, should we do some emails,
yeah,
buddy?
Is Lisa still doing the emails? I don't know.
She is, yeah, of course she is. Yeah.
That woman is a saint.
She is. Okay, this first paragraph, let me just get your take on this. This first paragraph is very nice about us.
Yeah.
Very sweet, but it's going to be quite embarrassing to hear. I've just literally skimmed it. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I just start by saying thank you? I always thought you were lovely, funny guys, but listening to this podcast, your kindness and humility and love for those around you just shines out. Whenever I read that, I always think that's sort of obviously more directed at Tom because
I think it's sweet stuff. I think, yeah. We ride on this bike of justice together. Yeah.
Oh, God. You imagine us on a tandem of justice. So embarrassing.
You're just looking at my sweaty, bald ass crack.
Just wow, without the hair, the sweat just really sort of waterfalls off those cheeks, doesn't it?
Jesus.
Anyway, she says, I hope you know how much you mean to people. That's very nice. Thank you so much. Anyway, my question is this. I've been working in quite a decent job for a number of years. Not amazing money or anything, but the job title makes it sound quite prestigious. And my elderly dad has loved telling his friends what his daughter does for a living. The thing is, the job is ending, and the only way I've been able to find to keep some money coming in is a minimum wage call centre role. This doesn't bother me, but I know my dad would be devastated as status is a big thing to him. And with him being in his 90s and in poor health, my question is, should I just keep quiet and not let on that I've had to change roles, or should I tell him even though I know it would upset him? I've only a few years until retirement, so I don't know if it's worth making him unhappy by letting him know. Thank you for the advice, and thank you, Lisa, for having to read all of these. This is a tricky one, isn't it?
That's a very hard. That's a humdinger, as we say in the question and answers auditorium that we need, you know, working. That is a humdinger. You know what? I'm like severed in two on this one. There's a part of me that thinks keep on making him believe that you're doing this job that makes him proud of you, and you know. But then actually, the biggest part of me thinks that he's proud of you anyway. You know, you're near to retirement. You've worked tirelessly all your life. It's not like you've lost the job. The role's finishing. And I think the fact of the matter is that, yes, prestige and sort of having a role that you've had is important to your father and everything. But I actually think the most important thing is that, you know, you're an honest and true and a good person, and I think that he respect that. And I don't think I think the truth of things is, and I think the truth of the truth is how you handle something like this. I think going to him and going, they've cancelled my role. I'm not doing it anymore. I've got to work in a minimum paid job. I think, you know, if you make it sound really down and low. He's. I think the thing is, he's going to feel that you're upset, and that'll make him upset, and that'll make him down. Whereas you just say, you know what, the thing I've been doing and I've loved, and we've both loved, is coming to an end now, and that journey is over. And you haven't got to say what you're doing. You haven't got to say you're getting paid minimum wage. So I've found something else that's going to keep tied me over until I retire. I think it's all the way that you sort of push that description. But I don't think you should underestimate. The pride in your dad, sorry to hear he's in ill health, but I think the pride that your dad has in you, I think will continue, because you sound to me like you're a pretty amazing person, and kudos for that.
Yes, I agree with everything that Tom said. Great advice there, Tom. First of all, can I say, Anonymous, I know that Tom says this a lot, but it is, you should be proud of the fact that, and I don't want to patronise you, but the fact that you've even that your job's come to an end and then you've stepped up and taken this job on that, you know, I don't know how much you enjoy it, you haven't said, but like, it's hard. It's hard to make choices like that. And it's difficult when you're not, when the opportunities that you really want aren't there. and so you find that you kind of have to compromise on what you really want to do in order to make ends meet. It's a really tough thing to do. So credit to you for doing that. And, you know, I don't know what your relationship's like with your dad. I suspect, listen, if it was one of my kids telling me that the job that they really liked had come to an end and they were taking off a minimum wage job in order to make ends meet, I'd be so proud of them for stepping up and doing that, you know. And I'd have confidence that either they'd go on to find something they really wanted to do later on, or if they were happy doing that, if they're close to retirement and they just want to do that until they're retired, then that's fair enough as well. I think the one thing that all parents want for their kids is to be happy. And when parents put pressure on you to do this thing or that thing, even though that it feels awful at the time, the only reason they're doing that is because they think that's what's going to make you happy. And sometimes they don't get that right, you know. And so, listen, I always think being honest is the best policy. And like Tom says, it's the framing of that is the key to this. If you say to your dad, you know, this thing has come to an end and I'm doing this but I'm enjoying it and it's a great way to pay the bills and stuff and I don't really have to think about it too much. I can turn up the second I leave work. I can think about other stuff. I don't have to worry about it. Zero stress, all of that. You know, he'll be delighted, I think. So, look, good luck with it. I hope the situation's not getting you down because there's no reason it should be. You're doing great, so well done. I wish I hadn't sounded quite as patronising as I did, but I do mean it.
Oh, man, sometimes you're, I love it when you're like that. And you know what? I think the listeners need to know that as soon as you finished that bit, you looked off into the middle distance.
Okay, next email. I felt sort of slightly embarrassed myself with the earnestness of that.
I think the most embarrassing thing was, you know, but like tittle-tattling on your son. I think that's the thing that...
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't get lower than that.
Yeah.
Okay, this is very exciting for you in particular. Hello to the wolf, owl, swan and cat.
Wow, the cat as well, flying in on the cat. Yo.
That's not the exciting bit, don't worry. I knew you were going to get... You think, oh my God, am I supposed to be excited about the fact that he shouted at my wife? I'm 24. My name is Jack Shyman, aka the Shark, all the way from Perth, Western Australia.
Wow, sis.
Yeah, boy.
My guy. Oh, mate. Yo, shout out Perth. I hope you're safe in these trying times.
I love the pod and have been binge listening on site while at work in Darwin, which is the capital of the Northern Territory. It's helped me a lot after a recent breakup from a serious relationship that fell apart when my partner moved interstate. You guys are sweet, sweet souls, and it's refreshing to hear two blokes be so genuine and down to earth. We need more guys like you. Well, ideally not, because it would sort of erode our USP on this podcast. I've always loved English culture and found that I always get on best with English people. My grandfather's from Newcastle. My dad is Swedish, so I've grown up playing football and continue to play locally in Perth. Brackets Gunners fan.
Wow. Like you, Rob. Big love. Same as you, Rob.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, you might. Yeah, like me. Which is not the common option compared to our Aussie rules version. I can picture myself living in England post-lockdown. I'm just interested in where you guys think would be... Oh, this is quite difficult, actually. And I'm just interested in where you guys think would be a good place to settle. Also, could you give some insight into how us Australian folks are generally perceived over in the UK? I know a few bad eggs have given us a bad rep over there, but I hope we're generally welcomed warmly. Cheers, guys. Keep up the amazing work. Big love. Jay Shy, the Shark.
Wow, Jay Shy, my guy. My guy. Firstly, Jay, congratulations on your roots and your family tree. Swedish, English, very strong, strong boy. And also in your footballing career. As far as I'm concerned, I think Australians are loved over here. No, I'm going to put it this way. I'm going to throw it out. If I go to a soiree or a dinner party or some kind of, you know, say it's someone's 50th or whatever. I turn up, I hear an Australian accent. I know that I've got a friend there.
Oh, God.
I know that there's someone there who I can, you know. It's one of my lifetime ambitions to go to Australia. I've never told anyone that. I've said it on the podcast before. But it is one of my lifetime dreams to go to Australia. I seriously think, kick back sometimes and just think, wow, man, what would I even, how, my mind would be blown. So, you know. Jay Shy, man, like it's like a kindred spirit. You know, both of us could meet halfway. I don't know, we're halfway between Australia and England.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Or you want to go to Australia, he wants to go to England. Why don't you meet in between so neither of you are happy? Just you two having a fucking awful time in Singapore.
But listen, my man. Firstly, don't make any rash decisions before moving. I've done that before, and on a breakup of a relationship, and massively regretted it because I didn't think it through. But, you know, if you've still got family in Newcastle, or you've still got family over here anywhere, there's always a chance that you could come over here, stay with them for a while, instead of making it like a massive life-changing thing of like, oh, I'm going to move lock, stock and two smoking barrels over here. Come and see if you like it. Spend a bit of time there over here. Where would I settle? I think, you know, I think Australia, I've been to Wales and met Australians. I've been to Newcastle, Manchester, Liverpool, Birmingham. Yeah, there's a good Australian scene everywhere. Obviously, in London is a big one. But as far as I know, like, you know, and this is, I can only speak for Big TD, but, you know, I always think Australians are like a friend that you've, you know, you've never met, like when you meet an Australian. So shout out to everyone Australian.
Shout out to everyone Australian.
Yeah, yeah, all the good Australians, you know. Yeah. But, right, okay. And obviously, Jay Shah, if you do make it over to this humble green land that we call England, there's a cold brewski waiting from me and Ron. We'll sit down and we'll, you know, talk to you about whatever and stuff. So you know where we're at, baby.
Jay Shah, once again, let me reiterate, you know that doesn't come from me. Now, listen, have Australians got a good rep over here? The British have had, quite a long-standing love-hate relationship with the Australians. We're rivals in sport, of which, let's be honest, you guys are pretty good. But we've got a love affair with your soaps. We love your long-running soaps. There's just something about, and your pop stars.
And also Harry Kewell.
Yeah, there you go. Manager of Crawley Town for a short time. Yeah,
and also a good football player and very humble man. So shout out Harry Kewell.
Yeah, so there you go, yeah. So Harry Kewell's done a lot of good for you in the UK. I don't want to give you the wrong impression. That's not the route. But anyway, I do think Australians are welcome. I'm about to say something hugely general here, which could get me into trouble. If you were moving over to England and you wanted to get a warm reception, you wanted to like make friends, it's fair to say that you'd be better off moving north rather than south, isn't it?
Well, I mean, look, if I was from maybe Australia or Denmark or I don't know, Russia or whatever, and I was going to, I'd look at Newcastle as a place to go.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, man. I know London's amazing, but in terms of like making friends as a newcomer to the city, I don't know how that would go, man.
I'd say really that Newcastle is the kindest place that you could go. I shout out Newcastle.
Okay. This is the things that you say. So go on, Newcastle is the kindest. Is it what you're about to say? The kindest place you can imagine.
No, it's not a fairy tale land, but there's an element of Newcastle when you go there, right? I think the people really, they care about their city. They care. Well, we've lost that in London. Like, I'm a Londoner, but you know, I don't think London has that same vibe of making sure the people are welcome, making sure. I think Liverpool has it. I don't think Manchester, maybe Birmingham have it as much. I think Liverpool, very proud of their city. I think they care about their city. They care about what people think about it. Newcastle, more than anywhere, though. I think the Geordies are like, this is our city and we're proud. We'll roll out the red carpet for people. We'll make sure that people, when they leave Newcastle, go, you know what, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Yeah, they haven't got the weather of, like, you know, Mykonos or the, you know, the sweet fucking fresh fruit of the Algarve, but they have something ever more dear, and that is a kind of spirit that you know that is resilient.
Oh God, it's just so lovely to hear you go off like that. 90% of what you said is bullshit, but it's just the way you deliver it is so beautiful. I love it.
Also, actually, Joe Shire, if you didn't know, there's also a Newcastle in Australia. So you could go there and see what it's like as a test.
There you go, Joe Shire. There you go, Joe Shire. If you want an example of English arrogance, that is somebody English telling you something about your own country that they believe you don't know.
I think it could be in New Zealand, actually.
Oh, God.
I can't be bothered to Google it.
Look it up. Do you want to look? You can't be bothered to Google it.
I'm sure it is in Australia. Let me just look.
Look, we might be being unfair because obviously Cornwall's quite friendly, isn't it? And that's not...
Cornwall, yeah. I mean, yeah. I just think Newcastle, yeah. Let me just look.
Okay, you've got a big fucking hard on for Newcastle today. I don't know why. Is it because
Newcastle is? So it's in New South Wales. It's got some nice beaches. Oh, Nobby's Beach and Mereweather Beach. Oh, and there's actually a place called the Bogey Hole there. and Fort Scratchy. So, yeah, sounds like a really fun place to go. So let us know if you ever get over there, or if there's anyone that...
No, we're not recommending he goes there, are we?
No.
This is pretty tenuous. He wants to move to the UK. So we said Newcastle might be nice. And then we said, why don't you try going to Newcastle in Australia?
Just so he gets... I don't know if it's the same. Maybe they... Because I imagine the people who set up Newcastle in Australia from Newcastle in England and basically got there and said, oh, let's just... Look, we've got a pretty amazing city back home, so let's try and make something similar over here.
Yeah, I guess what we're asking, Jay Shah, I know this hasn't been helpful to you, but can somebody tell us if there is a bogey hole in the Newcastle in England?
Yeah.
We'd love to hear about it. But listen, Jay Shah, good luck. Keep in touch. Lovely to hear from you.
And let us know if you ever make it to these sweet shores.
Yeah, please do, because Tom will happily meet up with you.
Imagine just quickly if Jay Shah moved to Newcastle and became like the mayor of Newcastle.
Yeah. Are you pitching? Is this your second sitcom you're pitching?
With Guy Pearce playing the mayor. With Jason Donovan.
Okay. Hello to the Wolf, Owl and Swan. Let me start by saying I'm a massive fan of yours. I enjoyed your stand-up in person. I love your shows. I've loved every episode of the podcast. In amongst a humorous chat, interesting stories and invaluable advice, you often mention how you've died on your ass at plenty of gigs. Can you tell us listeners what it's actually like to die on your ass? The emotions you go through, I can see why the Swan picked this out, fucking arsehole. The emotions you go through during that experience and how you deal with the mental struggles that must result in. Everything I've seen and heard from you both has been stitches. So how do things end up going wrong? Of course, I'd love to have a pint with you, sweet, sweet souls, even though Tom thinks I'm a Wonderland human being before we've even met. Oh, look at that. Got your card marked.
Wow, yeah.
Thanks, Ben.
Yo, Ben.
Tom.
So dying on your ass is awful, isn't it? Even, you know, every time we talk about it, I just think about the worst deaths. But I think... The fact is, it's like anything, isn't it? It's the confidence you have in certain things you're going to say and do, things not quite going to, you know. Like, I think the thing that people don't see behind the scenes of something, even like Kingari or, you know, Romesh when he's doing, like, stand-up or whatever, is the work that goes into, like, we don't do one draft of Kingari and that's it. We've written a script. We'll probably do about, anywhere between 15 and 25 drafts of something, to fine-tune stuff. And it's always a change in work to make sure it gets better and better. And that was the same with everything you do. So you're sort of constantly change it. I think, like, when a bit of advice Romesh said to me, you kind of have to die. You have to do stuff that, you have to take risks that aren't going to work to find stuff that is, it's the stuff that makes things different and makes things unique. As to how it makes you feel, it is absolutely crushing. It makes you feel alone. It makes you feel pathetic. It makes you feel absolutely... It's an interesting thing talking about this, because when I was away, I read quite a lot. And I read quite a lot. I played quite a lot of golf and I was reading and listening to Zen golf and how to apply the thoughts of Buddhism to not just your golf game, but your everyday life. And the fact that your embarrassment is always so wrapped up in your own, your own mind, your own thoughts, your own, like, you could die on your ass. And the truth, you feel like everyone in the room is looking at you going, that guy's a fucking loser. That guy's an absolute fuck. He's a terrible fucker. He's awful at what he fucking does. He shouldn't do this fucking thing. Actually, the truth of it, it doesn't really matter that much to them. They don't harbour that hate towards you. They don't have that fucking, the magnifying way that you arrogantly think that everyone in that room cares purposely. What they're probably doing is watching the next person who's just walked on stage and smashed it, and you're just a fucking, you're not nothing but just something that just occurred as a flicker point in a day that has been 24 hours or 18 hours, right? But for you, that's magnified. And the truth is, I could never say that that's never, I'm going to be able to take this, that bit of advice that I've just said and move forward with. But that is, I find that quite an interesting way of looking at the world now.
Mm. I think there's two types of death on stage. One of the things that people don't realise about stand-up is, like, sometimes you turn up to a gig And it tends to happen with corporate gigs more than any other. But you turn up to a gig and the audience are miles away. It's not, the sound's a bit funny. It's not lit properly. And people sort of think you can do stand-up comedy in any sort of circumstances. The truth is, it's actually quite a fragile thing. In order to make stand-up work in a room, like people have to be seated close enough to the stage. They all have to be in clear view of the stage. The acoustics have to be good. There's loads of different things. And sometimes those things aren't in place. And you can just die without it being your fault. You can. So, you know, you can do more or less to try and save yourself. But there's some gigs that are unplayable and it's fucking humiliating. I've done a load of gigs like that and you just have to sort of take it on the chin. There's other gigs that you die at because you fucked up, because you've done something wrong, or it tend to happen to me really early on where I was playing the gig wrongly for the room. I wasn't reading the audience properly or whatever. And those, you don't realise it at the time, but actually those are savable gigs, but they're not savable for the level of skill that you've got at that time. And then there's other types of gigs, which are the kind of ones I've talked to Tom about, where you're trying out new stuff and you're taking risks. And sometimes you just die on your ass and you have to. You have to. It's like going to the gym. It's like when I start out writing a new tour show, I'll go to a gig with a brand new 10 minutes. And I could write a really, you know, you write this 10 minutes and you try that 10 minutes and you've got a choice. I've had it loads of times. I've gone to a new material gig and I'm aware that I'm waffling a bit, but it's quite a complicated phenomenon, dying your ass. But I've been at a new material gig and I've got this stuff that I've just written that morning and the guy who's gone on before me is absolutely ripping it. And you're sitting backstage and you think to yourself, what do I do here? I could either go out and do this new material and probably die or really struggle because I don't really know it and I'm trying to still figure it out. Or I can do stuff that I know is going to work and have a good gig here. And it's always the wrong decision to do the stuff that you know is going to work. You have to just go and take it on the chin because otherwise you're going to regret it. I sometimes think to myself, even when I've like had a really tough gig trying out new stuff, I always think to myself, well, I've left Lisa and the kids for the evening to come and do this gig. What am I going to do with that time? Am I going to just like do the same stuff that I know works and have a little ego stroke, or I'm actually going to try and push it? And so it's always the right option to do that.
Do you know that I just thought as you were talking there, the best bit of advice I've ever been given: let failure be your teacher, not your undertaker.
I feel like I've heard you say that before. Are you nodding because you know you've said that to me?
No, I don't think I've ever said it. I have that as, I'm thinking of getting that tattooed. I think it's okay. Very...
Where would you have that?
Just
on your nearly shaved ass crack?
Probably just above my hip.
Oh, I'd like that. That'd be good.
Yeah.
But in answer to your question, look, the truth is I've tried to science it, but you just die on your ass. You can just die on your ass. There's a number of different reasons. And in answer to your question, how does it feel? It feels horrible and awful every single time it happens. And it doesn't get any easier. And it's rank. And if it does start to get easier and you start to get all right with that, it's time to stop doing comedy.
Honestly. True say that.
Okay, Tom.
Okay.
It's time for you to... I feel like I haven't heard one of these in a long, long time.
Because I haven't done one. I'm hoping I've still got some... I'm hoping there's gunpowder's still...
Some juice in the tank.
I'm hoping, yeah. Hoping there's some leather for the road.
Over to you.
There was a small boy and his mummy was going to the shop and she turns around to him and says, what do you want when I'm at the shop? And he says, just please get me a chocolate lion bar, please. And so his mum goes to the shops and he sits waiting for this lion bar, excited to unwrap it and take a bite. Anyway, his mum gets home and she says, there wasn't any lion bars at the shop today. So I just got you a boost. And he said, a boost? I don't want a boost. I don't like boosts. And she says, you've never tried a boost. And he says, no, it's not a lion bar. I don't want it. So she puts the boost in a cupboard. Fast forward 2-3 weeks, his little friend, Amelia, is coming over So she comes over and she's like, you know, they're playing in the garden, they're doing all sort of, you know, messing around, whatever, slipping slides, and, you know, it's quite a nice day. And Amelia goes, oh, I'm starving, hungry. You know, have you got any snacks? And the little boy's mum turns around and says, there's a Boost in the cupboard that Taylor didn't want to have. And so the little girl goes, oh my God, I love Boosts. They're my favorite bar in the world. They're my favorite thing. I love them so, so much. And the mum says, oh, you can have it if you want, Amelia. So Amelia's like, the mum starts to bring the Boost. And then Taylor steps forward and says, no, I want the Boost. And he takes the chocolate bar and he eats it. And it's delicious and he enjoys every bite. And Amelia just stands there watching, and she goes home in the end because she's quite hungry. And sort of basically her mum's got a cupboard full of Boosts. The point of the story is, try new things. Don't be confined by a Lion bar when there is a world of other chocolate bars out there. Open your eyes and your taste buds and your minds. Don't be forced into just believing there's only one chocolate bar for one human being. The world is rich. Enjoy its harvest.
Wow. That's, really good one.
Yeah,
really,
enjoy really that good one.
Yeah.
I feel bad now because Taylor's one of, I've actually got a really good friend, really close friends of mine. I have a son called Taylor, who's a really sweet boy, who's actually one of the nicest kids, but I don't know that, you know. I feel now that, yeah, Taylor's...
Well, you've needlessly brought him into a story that didn't need to
involve him. Yeah, but I should chat. He actually is, well, he listens to this podcast, so there's no reflection on the actual Taylor.
The kid does.
Yeah, he really enjoys this podcast, yeah. He's not a kid, he's 14. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I should say that Taylor's, the character wasn't based on you. Big shout out, Taylor. Good luck in your new football career. And hope to see you soon, mate.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Well, it's good to be able to do this for you while you're incapable of sending text messages or... calling people directly. Okay, Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. So, guys, once again, we're doing one of these a week for the next few weeks. We are still putting together live dates, so that's not gone away. But it's just for whatever reasons, work things and stuff like that, we've had to push it back a little bit. But it's still happening. We will let you know as soon as it does. Take care of yourselves, guys. We love you very, very much.
Remember. Structure is peace, and peace is everything.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
If you have a problem, opinion, feedback, or anything at all, please email us at wolfowlpod@gmail.com. That's wolfowlpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, mainly because we don't have any content ideas. Thank you.